This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
The NCAA tournament bracket is set. There was some controversy. Two true locals involved, Maryland and American University. Dwayne Simpkins is the coach at AU. He'll join us at 11. They play Mount St. Mary's in a 16 versus 16 game on Wednesday night. Terps coach Kevin Willard will be with us on the show tomorrow. Matt Schick from ESPN, he covers college basketball, will jump on with us at 11:20. Ben Standing at noon with the moves that Washington made since we last spoke on Friday. I would say maybe the biggest piece of news, not that it was surprising, is that Dante Fowler Jr. is gone. He's heading back to Dallas on a one-year deal. He just wasn't what they were looking for against the run. Not too bad as a pass rusher. 10.5 sacks in one season here. He had an impact this year. There is no doubt about that. But Dante Fowler Jr. heading back to Dallas. There was a bunch of NFL news over the weekend. Not the biggest coming from Cincinnati, where both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins have been signed. We've never seen this much amount into one receiver as Chase becomes the highest paid non-quarterback of all time. And it's not even close in terms of what they've got invested in both receivers. And there is reporting that they're making an effort to get Trey Hendrickson signed and kept. So we will keep up to date on that. And then the weirdest thing I thought from the weekend, Denton, and I don't know if you were going to include this in your news or not, is that Cooper Rush, the backup quarterback in Dallas, who's had to play a bunch and has done pretty well against us in particular, he signed a two-year deal to back up Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. I don't know if that struck others as odd. Not that leaving Dallas was odd, but backing up Lamar Jackson, that's not the kind of quarterback Cooper Rush is. You know, they've had guys like Tyrod Taylor, and they've had guys that have more mirrored what Lamar is. That's not Cooper Rush. But Cooper Rush has played pretty well. That's enough on Cooper Rush. That was surprising to me when I read that on a ticker. Rory finished off J.J. Spahn this morning at the Players. That's what I've been watching for the last hour or so. I was really rooting for Spahn. I don't know why, but Rory wins the Players' Championship after darkness got him last night because of the weather yesterday. Good morning, everybody. Alex Ovechkin got one over the weekend. He's now 8 away from Gretzky's mark with 15 games in the regular season left. So we are in countdown mode. The commissioner and Wayne Gretzky start traveling with the Caps when he gets to 5 away from the record. So we will certainly be all over that as March Madness gets underway and starts to roll. Speaking of March Madness, this from Dan to start the show. Kevin, you are hopelessly optimistic when it comes to your Terps. I bet them to win the Big Ten tournament based on your advice. I bet them to beat Michigan and cover. I bet them to go to the Sweet 16. The program just chokes too much. I've already bought back Grand Canyon for major size. First of all, Dan, all due respect, I did not predict them to win the Big Ten tournament. What I spoke to was my desire to see them play well in the Big Ten tournament. You know, Maryland's been in the Big Ten. This is year 11. They made it to the semifinals on Saturday against Michigan for just the third time since they've been in the league. And I now kind of feel like my team is a Big Ten team, you know, more than a decade, 11 years. And by the way, in 11 seasons in the Big Ten, Maryland has finished in basketball in the top five, seven of those 11 seasons, in the top three, five times, in the top two, three times, and they finished first in 2020. Not that bad as a regular season basketball program in the Big Ten since joining it. I guarantee you, Denton, that most Maryland fans, their memories are much more negative about what they've been in the regular season. But I just gave it to you. In 11 years, top five, seven times, top three, five times, top two, three times, and they finished first in 2020. They've won 121 Big Ten games, lost 85. Turgeon, during his run, had the third most wins in the Big Ten during his tenure in the Big Ten, behind just Tom Izzo and Matt Painter. And Kevin Willard is four games over 500 in his 3 years at Maryland. So hopelessly optimistic is, you know, not blindly optimistic. The problem, of course, and I understand this, trust me, I do, which is why I understood the frustration from fans during the Mark Turgeon era, even though Turge was a really good coach. Just ask any of the coaches he coached against. But the problem is that this is a March sport. College basketball has become a 1 month out of the year sport, March. And if you don't succeed in March, you're not a success for most. You know, and Maryland in the Big Ten tournament since arriving to the Big Ten, they were 5-9 coming in. They're now 6-10 overall. And for Maryland basketball fans, that's not good enough. And I hear you. I'm with you. I don't disagree with that. And then Maryland's been beyond the first weekend just once since they've been in the Big Ten. And that was the 2015-2016 season when they did not have to face as a four seed the five. They faced Hawaii to get to the Sweet 16 and then lost to Kansas. Actually, a more competitive game than someone had mentioned to me the other day on the air. I forget who it was. The game was virtually tied with about 15 minutes to go. And then Kansas pulled away and they won by double digits. And that's the thing, right, is that you got to do well in March. One and done, doesn't matter, no excuses. You got to do well in March. And I did not pick Maryland to win the Big Ten tournament. I thought they had a chance to do well in the Big Ten tournament. I was looking forward to watching, you know, a lengthy stay in the Big Ten tournament, and they crushed Illinois on Friday night, and they lost an absolute gut-wrenching heartbreaker on Saturday to Michigan in the semifinals. On, by the way, their fourth loss, essentially with less than 5 seconds to go. You know, multiple buzzer beaters. They lost at the buzzer to Their last four losses are to Northwestern, to Ohio State, Michigan State in Michigan. They lost to Northwestern at the buzzer in overtime. Literally, as the horn sounded, the ball went through. They lost to Ohio State on a three-point bank shot with 5 seconds to go. They lost to Michigan State on a 60-footer at the buzzer. And they lost to Michigan with 0.4 seconds left in regulation on Saturday. I mean, that is painful. And yeah, it was a hell of a basketball game. The semifinal game between Maryland and Michigan, hell of a game. How Maryland was in it, getting out-rebounded 47-18, that doesn't even sound possible, to get out-rebounded 47-18. But they did. And that is concerning. Now, there aren't many teams in the draw with 2 7-footers like Michigan has. But Maryland got out-rebounded on Saturday 47-18. Michigan had more offensive rebounds in that game than Maryland had total rebounds. How were they in it? Well, Michigan turned the ball over a ton, and Maryland didn't. Maryland, by the way, in their win over Illinois on Friday night, scored 57 points in the first half with 0 turnovers. That's another thing you won't see very often. You won't see the rebounding disparity as a team stat postgame, and you won't see 57 points in a half with 0 turnovers. But Dan, look, you're not wrong that they haven't done well in March for a long period of time. How much of that is choking? I think that is not necessarily the case. I mean, their best team didn't have a chance to participate. That was a team capable of making a Final Four run. The year before that, they lost to Will Wade, who basically cheated at LSU. And they had a salary cap before the sport really had a salary cap at the buzzer. And they lost a couple of other tough games. I mean, Alabama was better than them twice. They got beat up by West Virginia 1 year in the second round. I'm not sitting here excuse-making for them. They've not been good enough. Mark wasn't good enough in the tournament. And Kevin Willard, by the way, has never been to the second weekend either at Seton Hall or at Maryland. They beat West Virginia 2 years ago in the first round and then got run out of the building by Alabama in the second round. This, however, is a good basketball team. It's a team that has the capability in terms of their players and the overall vibe I think the team has to make a deep run. I've said that for a month and a half now, and I still believe it. I don't know much about Grand Canyon. I know they're coached by Bryce Drew. I know that they are in the tournament for the third consecutive year. And then in a second round game, I actually liked the draw they got. They could play Memphis, who's a little bit banged up, or they could play Colorado State, who's red hot and actually favored as a 12 over a 5 in the game in which Maryland would have to play the winner on Sunday. Maryland plays Friday at 4:35. You'll hear it right here. You're going to hear the whole tournament right here. We are the home of the NCAA basketball tournament, the Westwood One coverage. You will hear that on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then beyond. We will be shortened up, right, Denton, later in the week on Thursday and Friday?
Yeah, 1 hour of power on Thursday and Friday from 10 to 11.
We will be, I think, unveiling brackets if we don't do it on Wednesday. We might have to do it on Wednesday. I will have smell test picks for the tournament throughout. I've done pretty well with that over the years. So we will start. I already like a couple of games. Unfortunately, Denton, some of the games that look just fishy are favorites. Like, some of the favorites look fishy. There are a bunch of dogs being bet by the public right now. But we'll get to those starting tomorrow night. But, Saturday, that was another, you know, the Michigan State game was really tough to handle for Maryland fans, and Saturday was really tough to handle. To be honest with you, I don't think they deserve to win the game. When you get out-rebounded 47-18, it wasn't, by the way, for most of you, some of you I know understand this, they were switching most of their screens. It wasn't all Queen and Reese getting punked at the rim. Sometimes they were out guarding the perimeter on switches, and that was part of the problem at times. But that they could have gone either way. How good was Derek Queen, though? 31 points hitting those two clutch free throws. There were a couple of possessions where it was all Queen one-on-one that I didn't love, but tough loss. And then Michigan went on to win yesterday, beating Wisconsin in the final. All right. Want to talk a little tournament when we come back? Talk about the draw, talk about some of the controversies. We can do that. Denton, did you host any shows yesterday on this?
Yeah, I did a gambling show. It was before the stuff had been announced, but I did a gambling show on it. Had a lot of thoughts on a particular team from the state to our south that has a baby blue that I did not think should get in and did get in.
They did get in. But you know what? It's called a television show, this tournament. And that is the perfect example of why North Carolina got in. All right, more on that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tune in tonight at 7 p.m. for Talking Terps with special guest Hall of Fame coach Gary Williams, previewing Maryland's tournament showdown against Grand Canyon. Catch all the latest Terps talk on the Team 980. We will get you ready for Maryland's game on Friday this week. We'll have somebody on from Phoenix to preview Grand Canyon. That's where Grand Canyon is. And we will obviously be able to preview Maryland on our own. We hope to get Gary on the show, too, this week. Kevin Willard will be on with us tomorrow. Today, Dwayne Simpkins will join us in about 45 minutes at 11 a.m. His AU Eagles, Patriot League champs, are in the tournament as well. By the way, the Laramie Tunsil deal became official over the weekend, and he will meet with media today at 1 o'clock. So we'll have some of that sound for you tomorrow. So the brackets got unveiled. The bracket got unveiled on CBS yesterday. And per usual, there was controversy, and not over really the higher levels of seeding, although there is one very confusing thing for me, which I will get to here shortly. But you know, usually when we get, you know, who's in and who's out, the last couple of bubble teams, those left out versus those included, you know, you can have a couple of decent-sized named teams. But this may be the biggest include that we've seen, and maybe the biggest exclude. You know, this was basically North Carolina for Indiana. I mean, you could say West Virginia. A lot of people think West Virginia actually had the better case to be in the field as the last team in versus North Carolina. North Carolina, by the way, for those that don't know, a loss to Duke in the ACC tournament semifinals. They had a chance to tie the game with free throws, actually had a chance to take the lead with free throws. First free throw was missed, second free throw was made, but there was a lane violation. And there seemed to be a lot of sympathy over the weekend for the player Withers, I think was his name, that committed the lane violation, as if to say, it's so unfortunate. I mean, maybe we shouldn't have called it. It was a clear lane violation. That was not one of those. And by the way, the guy made the free throw. His lane violation could have thrown the free throw off. North Carolina lost to Duke, who, by the way, did not play Cooper Flagg in the game. Rather big difference. And Carolina, who had a 1-12 record against what they call quad one teams. For those that don't follow it, the best teams in the country, 1-12. Despite playing one of the toughest schedules in the country, they didn't beat anybody tough. Just one win against top-tier opponents. By comparison, West Virginia was 6-10 against Quad 1 teams, and Indiana was 4-13 against Quad 1 teams. Since the skin season ended, I've watched a lot of college hoops, and I'm telling you, Denton, North Carolina stinks. Like, they're just not even a good team when you watch them. They don't look like a tournament team. The numbers don't say they're a tournament team. But this is a television show. This is a one-month off-the-calendar sport. It's the month of March. And North Carolina is a true blue blood. And it is better to have North Carolina playing in a first four game and perhaps beyond. And they will play tomorrow night in the second of the two games tomorrow night against UC San Diego, who, by the way, is apparently pretty good.
Now they're playing San Diego State.
San Diego State. Yeah. Yeah, San Diego State. And they are just a 3.5-point favorite over San Diego State in that 12 versus 12 game. But Indiana would have been good for the television show. Maybe not West Virginia, but Indiana would have been good for the television show. But they're not North Carolina anymore. Indiana's not North Carolina. Those baby blues and having, you know, ACC royalty, college basketball royalty in this thing. Let me just say, I didn't follow it as closely as you did, Denton, in terms of the numbers. But I got into it this weekend, and I was shocked when I saw North Carolina made the field. And I was disappointed as a Big Ten guy that Indiana didn't make it. I actually think Ohio State had a claim too, but they just played so poorly down the stretch. So it really looked like they were out, especially when they lost early in the Big Ten tournament. But Indiana won at Michigan State recently. North Carolina didn't beat anybody. And they were lucky to beat Wake Forest in the tournament game that they had the other night. How did they get in? Other than the NCAA tournament wants to make sure that these first four games get some ratings.
I mean, that's the only justification of it. It felt like such a participation trophy award, right? Hey, you guys played a bunch of really good teams and stunk, but you played really good teams. So thanks for participating. Here's a spot in the NCAA tournament. I don't want to hear nobody talk about no quad one wins from this point forward because they clearly don't mean anything. If your brand is big enough, you get into the tournament. It's as simple as that. I like RJ Davis. I think he's a fine player, but I watched UNC maybe a lot more than I should have down the stretch, considering they weren't very good, and there was nothing that was all that exciting about them. There was nothing that jumped off the screen and told me that this is a good team that deserves to play in the NCAA tournament. But I say all that to say, Kevin, they're going to at least the Sweet 16. There's no way we're going through this whole process yelling at the clouds about how UNC got in when they shouldn't have for them to just lose.
Denton, I've watched them a bunch of times down the stretch. They're not very good.
They're not very good, but it's March. And like, there's just something. We're spending all this time focusing on UNC. They're winning at least two games in the tournament.
Would that save Hubert Davis's job?
I think so. Especially if they get to the Sweet 16, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the two teams that they played, you know, over the last month of the season that were any good at all, and I mean, they played some bad teams, okay? Bad teams in the ACC. Clemson beat them by 20, Duke beat them by double digits, and then Duke, without Cooper Flagg, had a massive lead. And just kind of, you know, give Carolina credit for coming back, but they did what they did all year long, which is they lost to good teams. They didn't beat anybody good. The only quad one win they had during the course of the season was UCLA, I believe, right? And that was back in December.
It was months ago.
And by the way, at the time, UCLA was not very good. They were ranked, but not great.
Yeah, they were in the midst of what ended up being like a mid-season free fall.
Yeah. So that would be the controversy. I would also just say this. How does Michigan run the Big Ten tournament, beat Purdue, and beat Purdue soundly, okay? Beat Maryland and then beat Wisconsin and end up as a 5 seed, with Wisconsin being a 3 seed, Maryland being a 4 seed, and Purdue being a 4 seed. This goes to something Scott said to me, you know, at some point a couple of weeks ago. I forget if he was on the show and he said it or not. Van Pelt. He said that in talking to some of the people that are a part of this committee, these conference tournaments really don't mean anything.
Nothing.
And they really don't mean anything to seeding at all. And so Michigan winning the Big Ten tournament, you may say, well, then what's the point of playing these conference tournaments? Well, money would be answer number one. Number two is there is a lot of pride associated with winning these conference tournaments for this, for schools. Certainly the schools and their fans and their alums and the people associated with the schools, maybe not as much for the players, but Michigan looked pretty excited to win the Big Ten tournament. You see that all over, and I'm not just talking about the automatic qualifying, you know, teams that have to win to get in. But Michigan ended up being a 5 seed after running the table here in the Big Ten tournament, beating 3 teams seeded higher than them. And they're on the 5 line. They're the team that's playing UC San Diego, and I've seen a lot of people pick UC San Diego to upset Michigan. And Maryland and Wisconsin and Purdue are all in front of them. Look, I don't like the committee saying we're going to try in the top 16 teams anyway to get them as close to home as possible. Maryland's playing in Seattle, for crying out loud. They're a top 16 team. They're playing in Seattle. They'll stay out west. San Francisco is the regional if they were to get 2 wins this weekend. And then the closest they would play would be San Antonio. That's where the final 4 is. And then one other just quick gripe. You can't play Louisville in Lexington in the first round. That's just not, you know, you can play top 4 seeds close to home, where they are, they have earned the right to play close to home. You can't play Louisville in the state of Kentucky in a first-round game against Creighton and then potentially in a second-round game against Auburn. How did that happen?
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was like, how do you allow that to happen? I think I think Maryland would have been in Seattle regardless, I think. But I don't know how they weren't in the East. I think Coach K had something to do with that. Maryland should have been a 4 on Duke's side of the bracket.
I think, you know, Lenardi had Maryland as a 3 before Saturday. But again, if the conference tournament doesn't mean anything, then perhaps they were destined to be a 4 the whole way. I'll be honest with you. I wanted them as a 4 in Auburn's region. I've told you since I started paying attention that of the top SEC teams, to me, Auburn was the least impressive of those teams. And but they were the number one overall. I would not have minded seeing Maryland as a 4 in that region. Florida is excellent.
They're so good. I think they're the best team right now.
I think Duke, Houston, and Florida are the 3 best teams that I have watched. I mean, Duke healthy. I think those are the 3 best teams, and I don't even know what order I would put them in, but I might put Florida 1, Duke 2, Houston 3. Just because Houston can't score the same way Florida and Duke can, but Houston's pretty nasty. But I thought when I saw Duke pop up as the one, I was expecting, I thought there was a chance Maryland would be that 4 there, but then when I saw Oregon as the 5, I knew it wasn't going to be Maryland there. Although you got 14 SEC teams, ridiculous. And how many potential second round matchups are there between SEC teams?
Second round? I don't think there are any.
Yeah, there are. There are a couple. I'll tell you what they are here in a second as I scroll down.
It looks like they did a really good job of making sure you would not get any round of 32.
Texas, Kentucky could be a second round game.
I think that's it.
There's one other one. I'm pretty sure.
The committee, the one thing that I think the committee does a really good job of,
Oklahoma, Florida could be a second round game. Yeah.
I think they do a really good job of eliminating or making it very difficult for a conference versus conference matchup in round 2. You know, once you get to the Sweet 16, it's all fair. But I think they do.
It's
a really
almost
good
impossible
job.
If you're going to put 14 teams from one league in the tournament not to have that happen.
Right, but putting 14 and only getting the potential of two, and that's if Texas even gets there to begin with.
Right,
I think that's a really impressive job by the committee.
Yeah,
that's probably the last time I will give them any sort of praise today. But you know, credit where credit is due.
We're gonna find out. Look, one and done. Just like any one and done format, you don't always get the best team to win it all, but it makes it more dramatic, that's for sure. And the SEC's got 14 teams in the draw. The Big Ten, 8. It looked like the Big Ten had a chance 2 weeks ago to have 10 with Indiana and Ohio State included, and both of those teams were left out. They were among the first four left out in order. I think it was West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio State, and Boise State. Were the first four out, and Carolina was the last one in. You like Florida to win the whole thing, I'm assuming?
No. So I don't know what your process is when you fill out brackets. What I tend to do, first of all, I'm a paper bracket guy, and then I take the paper and put it on online to all of the various pools that I'm in, but I'm a paper bracket guy, so I filled out my first rough draft before the show this morning. I'm holding it now. I'll make some adjustments to it probably on Tuesday. I need to listen to people. You know, if everybody has Duke winning, I'm not going to have Duke winning because that's idiotic. But I actually don't have Florida going. I don't even have them in the Elite Eight. You know who I have in the Elite Eight? This just sounds such a homer. I have Maryland beating Florida in the Sweet 16.
This is one of those draws I go into as a Maryland fan where I'm not afraid of anybody. Like I think that on Maryland's best night, they can beat anybody in the draw. I believe that Duke is so deep, but you know Florida. I don't know, man. Watching them, they
you know,
are.
You know who Clayton reminds me of? Their guard. He reminds me very much. Remember Carson Edwards from Purdue all those years ago, where he was just dropping 40 burgers everywhere.
He had 40 against UVA in that
40 against UVA
the Elite Eight,
when they
or the Tennessee game.
Yeah,
where was it? The UVA game.
I think he had 40 and one. I think he had like high 30s or high 28. In the other one. But Will Clayton is very similar. Like they have like almost a very similar looking jump shot, and they're not the tallest guys in the world. So I do see some similarities there. I just feel like everyone and their mother, I pulled up this ESPN thing, and I love ESPN for doing this. They show the percentages of who is picked to win. Like 25% of ESPN, people that play ESPN, have picked Duke to win, which is an insane number. And 19.9% have picked Florida. I really like that because I tend to stay away from the massive favorites like that.
Well, what you get, you get people paying attention for the first time, and so they pick the brand names
right
in their brackets. That's why Duke. I would bet you Duke is the every time they're a number one seed, they're probably the number one pick among the millions of entrants into the ESPN bracket contest every single time they're a one seed.
I would say anytime they're a top four seed, they're probably the highest picked team.
Yeah.
Everyone picks Duke.
I do fill out a quick bracket, but honestly, the bracket stuff, we all understand this. I mean, people that know nothing and have not paid attention or watched one game can win a bracket. I go immediately to the point spreads and start to look to see which spreads look odd and see if the public starts pounding one side, and that'll give me at least a feel for better first round upset possibilities. There are a couple of those. I told you actually there's some favorites that are not going to get bet very heavily in this first round. I'll tell you, for some reason people love McNeese State against Clemson
again.
I'm sorry,
again, they were like the most heavily bet 12 seed last year.
People love Arkansas against Kansas. Kansas has not played well. They're not impressive to watch at all. And Kansas is favored by 5 in that game. So that's a favorite that I like. I was looking through this earlier. There was some other crazy game where the action was completely loaded on one side already.
Is it UC San Diego?
Hold on.
Because that Big
By the way,
Ten
people, you're sucked. Getting public action on Grand Canyon against Maryland. Maryland's down to 10.5. They opened at 11.5. Oh, Arizona. People love Akron. They're playing the Zips who trailed. I actually had Miami of Ohio on Saturday. They were getting 6.5 in the MAC final against Akron. They were under bet significantly, and the public was on Akron. Don't ask me why. Akron was down 17 in that game and came back and won it by 2. So I got the cover. But Akron, people like him, and I think Jay Wright really liked Akron in talking about him on the air. And they are a heavily bet 2-touchdown underdog. They are plus 14. And so I kind of like Arizona. People like Bryant against Michigan State. There's a lot of dogs being played. I hate when I have favorites, but I think I'm going to have a bunch of favorites. But looking for like the true upsets, VCU. BYU can really score. That's what made that win by Houston over BYU the other night so impressive. They had scored 96 against Iowa State and scored, 60-something against Houston. But BYU is a super short favorite against VCU. By the way, real quickly, Mason, Tony Skin, they were right there. They had a chance at the end of that game yesterday. And VCU knocked down some shots, knocked down some free throws, but they were right there down 1 with about 1:50 to go. VCU gets through, but I think VCU might be a sharp play, plus 3.5 against BYU. Yeah, that would probably be the one right now of the potential upsets. What is that seeding difference? Is that 6-11?
VCU and BYU 6-11, yeah.
Yeah. Anything jump out to you?
I do
in
have.
In terms of upsets?
Yeah. I mean, you know I got to take.
You can't say Colorado State. They're favored.
Yeah, they're favored, which is crazy. I do have a 12-5 in the form of Liberty over Oregon. I got to bet my school, getting revenge for that Fiesta Bowl that I went to 2 years ago where my squad got shellacked.
What was that, 46-10?
Not important. It didn't even score 10, but we will score 10 mm-hmm. against Oregon in basketball, so suck it, Ducks. I do like VCU. I actually think VCU plays really well. Like, I was watching that A-10 game at the end. I mean, George Mason just didn't have shooters, and they had a shot. That shot at the end was as good of a look as you're going to get. The ball touched literally every side of the rim.
Oh, my God. It was a great play. It was a great playmaking play by the big boy who came down that left side and kind of hung in the air and made that. It was a perfect pass.
Everything you wanted.
Great look. Couldn't have asked for anything better.
I'm debating Marquette and New Mexico because Marquette has not played really well at all.
Yeah.
So I might. Right now in my rough draft, I have Marquette, but I might swap that to New Mexico. We should run a poll to figure out what our listeners, what site they like to use the best, and then have a bragging rights show competition.
Which site, which bracket site they like the most?
Yeah, because there's a bunch of different
ones. A
million
contests.
Yeah, ESPN, Yahoo, CBS. I think those are the main three. So I might put up a poll question at the Team 980 during this next break to see what our listeners like, and then we can create a Kevin Sheehan Show poll contest. It'll be for bragging rights, not any massive prize here, but bragging rights to see which one of our listeners is the best, and maybe it'll finally be the one that I actually win. I've never won one of these things. It's insufferable.
I actually won one a couple of years ago, and I think you know this about me because I've talked about it every year. I'm not really into filling out brackets. It's like fantasy football versus betting on football. They're just they're different things. It's, you know, weed and heroin. Like, I'm into heroin. I'm into the hard stuff. And the brackets just don't do it for me because it's just anybody can win the bracket contests. It's not as chance or random as hockey. And no, by the way, I do not take heroin. And my preference would be weed. I just don't – like, fantasy football to me is – there's not enough of a rush for me to do it. And the brackets are kind of the same thing. how many times does somebody in your, I mean, we've had family brackets for years. I mean, there's people that don't even pay attention end up winning. We had Florida Atlantic and San Diego State and Miami in the Final Four 2 years ago. NC State was in the Final Four last year. Give me your crazy Final Four. Is there a double-digit seed in the Final Four this year?
I do not have one yet, but I do have... Nope, they're a seven seed. Just kidding. I think that the... I have Creighton in the round of eight. And there are nine, so they're as close to a double-digit as you're going to get on my bracket.
I really liked BYU heading into this tournament, but this short line worries me, and I'll probably have VCU plus the points. But I thought BYU, in watching them offensively, like they were going to be difficult if they had, you know, teams that would be willing to run with them. Like they're going to play, if they beat VCU, they'll play Wisconsin in the second round, and then they'd get a team like Bama. I could easily see BYU in the Elite Eight if they get by VCU. Because Bama cannot guard anybody.
No, they can't. And if they're not hitting their threes, I have them going out pretty early. I actually don't even have them getting to the Sweet 16. I think that's St. Mary's. If it's Bama and St. Mary's, that's a nightmare matchup, I think, for Alabama.
Colorado State's won 10 games in a row. They're favored over Memphis. That would be Maryland's second-round opponent if Maryland beats Grand Canyon. I don't know anything about Colorado State, but Scott was telling me last night they got some guard that can really fill it up, and they've won like 10 in a row. I don't know.
Don't want to see them. Go Memphis.
That time of year, lots of fun. We'll do some Denton news when we come back. At 11, AU coach Dwayne Simpkins will join us. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. All right, Denton.
All right, big news. We're going to start in the NFL. God, that 2019 LSU team is paid. Jamar Chase gets a deal in Cincinnati, 40 years, $161 million. T. Higgins gets a deal, 4 years, $115 million. He has nothing to do with that LSU team, but I bring up that 2019 LSU team because right before we started the show, Derek Stingley out of Houston, 3 years, $90 wow. million, dollars, 89 yeah. guaranteed. If you're doing the math between Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Derek Stingley, four guys, their second contracts total $666 million.
Who is the other receiver that's in the NFL on that LSU team?
It was Terrace Marshall.
Oh, right. Yeah, Marshall.
And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the running back.
Number six, right? He was number six.
Yes. And then Thad Moss was a then Redskins training camp legend.
Yeah, legend in training camp. Well, we knew Chase would get the money that he got. We knew, you know, here over the last week that they were definitely going to try to pay Higgins. So what does this mean as it relates to Trey Hendrickson? Because, you know, they can now make the cap palatable for the next year or two with these deals. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, that's the part of it I think sometimes people don't understand is, yeah, they're paying Chase and Higgins, but they can structure it so that they can sign Hendrickson and fit him under certainly the 2025 cap. By the way, he is signed. I mean, let's not forget, he is under contract with Cincinnati in 2025. He just wants a new deal. So what do you think happens with Hendrickson at this point? Washington and others, and we talked about this on Friday, are hovering. There's no doubt, but they're not going to pay a first and a third. If that price came down to a second, maybe a second and a conditional fourth or something like that, I think Washington would be in on Trey Hendrickson. But what do you make of the situation with Cincinnati now that Chase and Higgins are formalized?
I think they're going to find a way to pay him. I think they are. I mean, they just gave... The fact that they were able to pay Chase and T. Higgins, Joe Burrow made it really clear he wants everybody to stick around, and I don't think you can justify letting Trey Hendrickson go after the defense was as bad as it was. So I do think they're going to find a way. This is the new Cincinnati Bengals, the Cincinnati Bengals that actually dish out money. I don't know how the contracts are going to affect the cap as of yet, those numbers, because I don't know that the deal has been officially signed, so we don't know the intricacies of those numbers and how that'll impact this year's cap, so you know what they'll be able to do with that Trey Hendrickson contract, but I do think they end up paying Trey Hendrickson.
All right.
puts Washington in a little bit of a tough spot. So you mentioned Dante Fowler to the Cowboys, Cleveland Farrell staying with the team, one-year deal. That was kind of the biggest news of the weekend in terms of guys that they signed, and I guess they're now just in the defensive end market. Maybe they go after Von Miller.
They signed Jalen Holmes, too, and I know they liked him. And we talked about he's a potential one-year or two. I mean, good God. I mean, the list now of the keeps of their own free agents has grown to, all right, Ertz, Wagner, Noah I, Mariota, McNichols, Noah Brown, KJ Osborne, Bates got a three-year deal, Dieter, Trent Scott, Seymour, Tressway, Zane Gonzalez, Sheldon Day, Nick Ballore got a two-year deal, Jalen Holmes, Cleveland Farrell. I mean, that is like 17, 18, 19 of their own, what was it, 28? Didn't they start with 28 free agents?
Yeah, they kept a lot of guys.
Kept a lot of guys. They needed to keep a lot of guys. They had a lot of, you know, roster spots. Okay. Yeah, I mean, on these one-year deals, they're bringing back players that know the system that they feel comfortable with. They were not comfortable in giving Fowler Jr. one year for $8 million, which is what he reportedly got in Dallas, $8.5 million. Not when he was a major liability against the run. But you look at them defensively and you say, man, you know, Kinlaw, Goldman, Wise, you brought back Wagner. That's a big deal. But have you gotten better at this point defensively like you needed to get better against the run? And by the way, you could make an argument, you are less a pass rush unit at this point, which really points to if Hendrickson, and they are interested, if he stays in Cincinnati, man, it makes it not even money necessarily, but plus 150 that they take a pass rusher at 29 or trade back and take, you know, a pass rusher at 36 and take a, you know, something else at 48 or whatever it ends up being in the trade back. But between now, if they don't pull off a deal for Trey Hendrickson, between now and the end of April, it's all about pass rushers and focusing on the pass rushers and the DNs that can be available and might be available at 29 and spending a lot of time looking at those players. RAS scores, leadership ability, all of that will be what they'll be looking for in addition to really good players. Because who do they have right now other than Luvu and Wagner and Armstrong as legit pass rushers? I don't think that's what they're expecting from Kinlaw.
No, I don't think so. They need to go get somebody if Hendrickson ends up being unavailable.
They need good seasons. I mean, really good seasons from Duron and Johnny Newton. And I think they who knows, maybe that's what they're expecting in year two.
They need one from Armstrong, too. Real quickly before we get
Armstrong came up big for them in the postseason.
I'd like to see it for more than just the final two games, though, because I think there is something there. I think if he does that for an extended period of time, we'd feel way better about the defense. Final thing here locally, Davey Martinez announces Mackenzie Gore will be the Nationals' opening day starter against the Phillies on March 27th.
Makes sense. All right. Dwayne Simpkins, AU's head coach. They are going to the tournament. He'll join us next.